Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester. As you can tell, today's episode is brought to you by Brad having an upper lung infection and me having knee surgery 2 days ago. So,
it's,
you know,
good times. He's on a crutch and this is the first day that I've left my house.
Yeah, but Brad has air going in and out of his body, and it's only and the out is only maybe 70% phlegm.
It feels good.
Just great. All right. So today's episode, we're gonna be diving into kind of the types of places a human could be living in the 41st millennium. And spoiler alert, they're all pretty bad. Some are real bad.
You know what's funny is we were talking about things that you never should talk about in public.
Yeah.
And the 1% became the 0.01% in the world of 40K. And they went from, there's a disparity, to a, you should live underground, yeah, and I should live up
in the sky. I'm going to live up in the sky. You're going to live underground, and don't actually make eye contact with me. Before we begin, though, let's do some quick plugs. Again, we have the new website, 40klorecast.com. We have the Patreon. I really emphasize all you to go to our Discord, though. Our Discord page is becoming, there's actually a lot of interaction.
It's so fun right now. Yeah,
a lot of people actually, there's actually community.
We've also got a spot. People are putting up models they're working on. Mm-hmm. Feel free, everybody's, a couple of people have asked this now. They've said it in the Discord. We really haven't asked. Spoil away, to be honest with you. If you want to have talks about it, this is a whole thing. Talk about the stories. If you want to put a spoiler tag on it, put a spoiler tag on it. But, you know.
Enjoy.
Literally talk about anything you want to talk.
Yeah, it's a Discord. And honestly, we're covering lore that's already written. So it's not like, you know, that's.
Like a spoiler, read the book.
Yeah, read the book. Also, Brad, where are you going to be in April?
April, I'm going to be in two different places. I'm going to the Gem Hammer team tournament down in Dayton.
Nice.
And it's going to be really fun. It was a good event. I went to the singles event there last year. Then I'm going to Anna's out at Montague, Michigan, holding the first GT in the new expanded tournament.
Store.
Sorry. Expanded store. And where else am I going to be? Adepticon at the end of the month.
Well, yeah, that's in April, because right now, like, when this episode drops, you all be listening to this.
Look, I'm a time traveler.
If you're listening to this on Monday, Brad and I will be there on Thursday. That's where we're going out together. So
true story.
But all right, well, let's dive into the meat of it. So this is a topic Brad and I have been discussing covering for a while, because we're both role play people. Like, we really enjoy a good RPG and a good setting. And that's what the whole trick to a good RPG is, having a good setting.
It's a setting.
Yeah. And the 40K universe is a setting.
And we wanted to talk about it. This is the reason we wanted to do the Inquisition first and some of the order, you know, all that, and give you a little bit of set, because it makes more sense now to talk about, well, what are the people doing? Exactly. Oh, yeah. There's a gigazillion, I don't know, make up a weird number. I don't know the numbers that are big enough for that. Humans in the galaxy. Billion
star. Well, yeah, okay. The number of people. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yep. It's just, and there is over a million worlds.
Yep.
A worlds, not people, in the Imperium. And it's crazy what's happening in the Imperium. The Imperium kind of sucks. For the regular person's life is ball. Yeah. And people are going to mention the paradise worlds. You don't live on the paradise world.
Yeah, we're going to cover them briefly. But let's just set to the stage. People are saying the vastness of what we're talking about. So 40K is played in the Milky Way. All right. The Imperium at the time of, we'll call it 40K, but right in that ish zone, they span about 2/3 of that galaxy. It's after the Eldar fell. You know, remember, the Eldar fell, and then the Great Crusade happened. So there was almost nothing stopping humanity's expansion. I mean, they had some Horus heresies, Wars of the Beast, Wars of Armageddon. Things have come up.
And I think that you say 2/3, and it's really, we're really in half, but we're in 2/3. We touched 2/3.
Yeah, we touched 2/3. But even with that 2/3, and this actually took a lot more research than I thought it would be, but I mean, candid, in those 2/3, there is the math I was able to find is that there's 1 billion stars in the Milky Way. Okay. So it's 600 million stars. Humanity is somewhere in that realm of. humanity only occupies about 1 million worlds. So we just in the own space, those of you who like math, just in the space that humanity is sitting in, they're only habiting less than 0.1% of the planets that they're actually over top. So we say, and this is an important thing when we talk about the Imperium. It's not like the Roman Empire, where, you know, whatever edge of the empire that exists, everything from that edge in is completely and wholly controlled by the Romans. No, humanity just is over all of this space. And some of it they have control over, some of it they have less control over. But so it's an important distinction. We talk about them having 2/3 of the galaxy. I mean, sort of.
Yeah. And we are populous.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of reasons here.
Mm-hmm.
I like your warp travel is not like that of Star Wars or Star Trek, because astropaths, there's got to be no life insurance on you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the big one, is moving travel in the 41st millennia. You can just go faster than light and you'll get there eventually.
And the thing is that, yeah, you'll eventually go places, or you can make that jump and you can hope for the best. And one of the reasons that we still have explorers, we still have rogue traders, is because the astropaths tend to stay on, hey, if you go from here to here, you probably won't have some guy put fish hooks in your eyeballs.
Yep.
And you're like, yeah, I'm probably just going to go this way. You're like, what over here could be shorter? You're like, fish hooks.
Yeah, it is. It's very funny in that when you read the GW lore, it reminds me a lot of if you ever read about, you know, the exploring the globe, like, you know, with like Magellan and all those people, where there were entire sections, like, all right, this is a weird tangent, we're gonna go into it. If you go south of India into the Indian Ocean, in between that and Australia is some of the roughest ocean in the world, to the point where people just didn't go through there for hundreds of years because just wasn't worth it. That's the warp storm. That's what the warp is like. There's section of the warp where it's like, hey, I could get, there's a straight line from this spot to this spot. We could be there in 3 days.
Or I'll just throw the other way.
Yeah. No, I'm going to take the 3-month journey around it, because if we go that way, to Brad's point, Slaanesh just appears.
Yeah. I mean, you really just don't go, hey, man, you know what sucks is playing Event Horizon as my day to work.
Yes. The other problem is the galaxy is also kind of full of enemies. So, you know, as mankind, this is why mankind, you know, has expanded but hasn't necessarily conquered everything, is that some sections in Imperial space are also like, no. Yeah, just
plus,
no.
While the Emperor was super excited about trying to make his own webway, no one knows where the webway goes.
Yeah.
And, well, you know who does? Jukari.
Jukari. Yeah.
And you go, this is a fancy planet. It's super far away from everybody else. I wonder why no one else has been here. And then you're like, oh, because I basically put a sign up that said free slaves.
Yeah, because of this stuff, mankind settles sections of their galaxy. They'll have 3 or 4 systems that might be near each other, and those will be heavily, you know, occupied and forced. But then there might be 30 systems between them and the next chunk like that, because I just can't reinforce it. And the Jukari show up, the Orc show up, whoever it is, or demons show up. And it's just, nah, it's just not worth, worth my time.
And you have to make it valuable because, again, the Imperium of Man is the bureaucracy of man.
Yep.
So you have to make logistic and financial sense to the Imperium to have anything happen. So you're like, hey, why should I make Imperial Guard bastions come out here? Why should I put the fleets out here to defend you between these? Mm-hmm. How many planets? What are you going to be making? What's going to be the tie that you're going to be bringing in that's going to be worth it for us to put people out here? If the answer was no, well, eh.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
It's not worth our time.
You should fist fight the orcs.
Yeah. Other thing, too, is that there still are warp storms, as we've covered a lot. And so it's also a planet. I mean, we'll use an extreme example. Let's say the Imperium finds a planet that's just got the exact minerals that they need, but it's the only planet in a system. if a warp storm were to come through and cut that system off, those guys are just all auto dead. They can't become self-sufficient. As a result, as we're kind of getting at, most of Imperial space is, in quotations, unconquered. It exists. The planets are recorded. The suns are recorded.
We've also said it's ours.
Yeah, and it's ours. But there's technically not a settlement there.
But
it's also not really empty. So this is going back to our Rogue Trader episode. This is what the Rogue Traders spend a lot of their time doing. The Explorer Rogue Traders are doing. They're going through all of these planets that are not, that the Imperium knows the planet exists, but has no Imperial record of what's on the planet. And the Rogue Traders are the ones going through saying, all right, I'm going to go check out. What was it? LV-426?
Yep.
LV-426. Don't go to LV-426.
And the big thing about this is the Rogue Traders often find old human expansions from Dark Age of Technology that just got lost and never got brought back into the fold. But also, they find as many of those as they do Xenos races and other things. And a lot of times, you get a note from these people you've never, who the hell's the Imperium of Man?
Yeah.
And they just drop you a card and a Rogue Trader goes, oh, you're part of the Imperium of Man. Well, they'll see you sometime between now and 1,000 years.
Actually, is one note we probably should have mentioned is that, and we talked about, I'm talking from like our third episode. When the Dark Age of Technology happened, not only did mankind get cut off from itself, but it also lost all records of what planets it was on. Man, when the Emperor stretched out from Earth, he did not, and I know it's a massive plot hole, not my fault, but you know, I didn't write it. Like, the most powerful psychic being on Earth doesn't know where anything is. Jesus, man. But anyway.
He was also there for it.
Yeah, it's like you could have just written it down. I don't know. But anyway, apparently they had no idea where anything was.
He kept everything on his Walkman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just the drive got wiped. You don't have a backup? No. So anyway. sorry. Usual John tangent of that doesn't make any sense. So as a result, these Rogue Traders are out there going planet to planet and marking what's at each one. And one like little, Brad and I were having a discussion about this, that's kind of a funny side note here, is there's no record of the Imperium having the kind of technology where they could fly over a planet from space and scan it. They have to land and go talk to people. And the analogy I used for this was Mass Effect 1, which, there he is. Yeah. Is the game good?
Oh, sorry. By the way, one of my, if not my favorite series of games to play, and surveying planets. And if you are fans of that stupid tank that you have to drive around.
Oh my God, it was the worst. You land on a planet for no reason. Okay. Anyone who listens to this game design, I have no issue surveying a planet, but unless there's something of like a story value to it, let it take me less than 5 minutes. It really is just annoying when I spend 30 minutes exploring a planet, looking at you, Starfield, and for no value. But anyway, but that's what these guys were doing. They would literally land on a planet and they'd have to go. And we're going to get over it later why this could get a little bit dicey for some of these Rogue Traders, this process of landing on the planets. But they would go through and they would mark the planet and they would report back to the Imperium, you know, maybe probably not LV-426, but LV-424. Yeah, it's like, yeah, maybe could be terraformed. Bunch of you know, adamantium there, possibly of value.
And the thing is that we have to state that we are really good at terraforming planets.
Yes. Oh, this is, yeah, they can flip.
This is one thing we still have technology for. Mm-hmm. We take whatever your shitty planet is and make it good.
Yeah.
Or make it at least.
I was saying, you're saying good.
Good, like, seems like
we're going to cover thing. Hive worlds at some point. Good is a pretty.
We make it usable. How about that?
There we go. Yeah, Brad's getting a lot of use out of that word good.
Habitable.
So yeah, it gets pretty. Yeah. So some of the things that become unclaimed, though, to what Brad was mentioning before, have human settlers. As we just said, there is leftover Dark Age of Technology. They were there. They survived the darkness, but the Emperor never got there. So they're just kind of like, oh, hey, what's going on? Other ones, though, were, you get there and actually might have been helped by some explorers. Because don't forget, I mean, the life in 40K sucks. And so sometimes people just pack up and kind of like, you know, the old Wagoneers of the American West.
They're still really explorers, which are another reason why, another reason to love the 40K setting is you're like, hey, this is what I'm into. And you're like, does 40K have it? Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
What do they have? You're like, yeah, they have this. They have basically old Western guys basically going out. Do they have basically Firefly happening? Yeah, all the time. People are just going to find worlds because this sucks. I'm out of here.
In some ways, it's actually some of the cooler parts of the game.
Yeah. And if you have, also, if you have the opportunity to leave, you should ask yourself two questions. One, am I able to leave? Two, am I currently in the ruling class?
Yes.
And the answer was yes to one of them.
Yeah. And what's funny, though, is that these brokers will land on a planet. They'll find human beings. And the only problem they run into is that sometimes the human beings that are on these planets don't necessarily want to be found because you just stepped into a chaos cult.
You stepped into a giant pirate settlement just raids other planets. And you're like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Because also, a lot of these things happen on a wildly big scale because of the fact that it's so far into the future. There has been so much expansion. You have so much access to things that can kind of get you up and running. Not full SDC style, but still, you can fab things pretty damn quick.
Yeah, I mean, an entire planet can get colonized by pirates, and they can extra into a giant pirate planet. So we're not talking Tortuga. We're talking an entire planet that they probably would name Tortuga, knowing how actually it's GW naming. They'd call it Tortugist because they don't want to pay for the.
It would also be ruled by Captain John Sparrow.
Another thing that comes up in Imperial Space a lot, though, is worlds that actually are listed as part of the Imperium, but haven't sent their supplies recently. So these are worlds, so eventually they've gone dark. These are the other ones that the rogue traders have to go and check in on. And
these are also the danger zone. These are the ones that the rogue traders are sometimes like, yeah, we'll get to these soon.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I mean, I was, when we were writing the notes for this, I was thinking about the story with Van Gorich when he killed all the High Lords of Terra. So he was on Terra.
Yeah, for a century.
He ruled for a century before anyone showed up and was like, hey, what's going on here, guys? So you can imagine these planets go dark a lot. If that can happen at Terra and he can be in charge for 100 years.
Hey, man, the mail hasn't been delivered in a while.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine if you're on a planet like, I don't know, 42 months of warp travel away from Terra and it just went dark. It's like, oh, we'll get there in a bit. So all of that's effectively a long way of us saying the Imperial space is in flux.
a wee bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, worlds are being conquered, worlds are being destroyed, both by invaders and by the Imperium, because the Exterminatus does exist. But at its core, what really matters is Imperium needs supplies. That's what matters. The Imperium needs
supplies. And they are pretty goddamn big about that.
Yeah. Let's dive into, Brad, what is an Imperial world?
Imperial world is someone that pays taxes, quote, hold on, pays taxes, yes.
Yeah, number one.
Follows Imperial law, huge air quotes going on right now. Huge air quotes,
yeah.
Like, did you pay your taxes? Yes, that is a hard you have to.
Yeah.
Follow the law. Yeah, if you pay your taxes, we probably won't show up if you keep paying your taxes. And the other thing that is a hard big yes is whatever widget you're supposed to be making, whether it's ships, steering wheels, wheat, whatever it is, make as much of that as we told you to make, and you probably be left alone. Don't join chaos. At least don't join chaos.
Overtly.
Yeah. Hey, as long as you're sending stuff.
Yeah, if there was a chaos god of production and tax paying.
Yeah. They would be like real blind eye going to that.
That one's okay. We're okay. We're all okay with it, with this one.
Yeah, Ted, the god of taxpayer production. Yeah,
exactly. Like, Ted's fine. Ted is not heresy. They're also, so all of them are ruled by a planetary governor. Now, when we say all of them, some planetary governors will rule multiple planets.
Some rule systems.
Yeah, or systems. But basically a planetary governor, because it's such a giant Imperium, obviously, so you have regional control. And that's what these planetary governors are. their job is just to make sure whatever they're in charge of keeps doing the thing it's supposed to do.
And these worlds also have their own local customs. And I say local customs when you're like, hey,
it's a planet.
Earth.
Yeah.
There's some stuff going on that's been going on for, I don't know, 40,000 years of history. So that's going on, but you still have to pay your taxes, make your stuff. Also, if somebody shows up, you better know the right things to say about the emperor.
By the way, if someone shows up with a bunch of like weird iconography all over them, you love the emperor. The emperor is the best. We can't make the worship of the emperor. Quick, throw up the emperor plaques before their ship's landing. I don't know. Put some stuff up.
You should put some posters up.
Right now. Go fast.
They're pretty hardcore about that.
But effectively, the governor has one job, and that is make sure the stuff we talked about earlier keeps happening. Taxes are paid and goods ship. Yes, the third one for governor is making sure the Inquisition doesn't think anything of your planet. Because if any of those three change, you get to stop being the Imperial governor, or your planet stops being a member of the Imperial records.
Yep.
Pretty quick.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have Uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
One thing that we've never discussed before, and this feels like the best time to do it, is how law is run in the Imperium.
I'm sorry, but you like them more than I do. I don't hate them like John hates Tal, but I have a love-hate relationship with what we're going to talk about next.
All right.
Which is the Adeptus Arbites, which is straight up Judge Dredd.
It's not even close. Like, it is.
They wear the Judge Dredd helmet.
Yeah.
It's his whole outfit.
Yeah.
I guess I like them because Judge Dredd's cool, but it's such a wild ripoff. And the problem is that the stories are wildly different about what they do, though. Some are they're this tactical force that polices, and some are kind of cool, almost detective. I mean, Eisenhorn rolls with Adeptus Arbite in the first book. Actually, he's with Adeptus Arbite several times. And they are tactically, they're like SWAT team detectives.
Well, to be fair, in the novels, they are. What they really are is the Imperial Police Force and Immigration and Coast Guard and Air Traffic Control and a bunch of stuff. Because so the cool thing about the Adeptus Arbites is the way they're organized. And I find them cool. They're not actually cool. They're just, it's mildly interesting.
But because they have a weird policy.
Because they report to Terra. They don't report to
others. But the thing is they have this weird thing because almost everywhere has some sort, if you're in an area that has anything, has some sort of Imperial Guard presence.
Yep.
There's always going to be garrisons of Imperial Guard all over the place. And they work not with them. They work adjacent to them.
Yeah, anyone who listens to the cast who's military knows where I'm about to go with this. This is the same way the U.S. is structured. I believe Britain's structured this way. Everything's structured this way. Governments don't have the military be the rule of law. You have two separate groups.
Yes.
So the idea is that for enemies abroad, that is Space Marine, all those ones.
I get that, but the problem is that we've shown in 40K, 40K time and time again is like, hey, people are acting up. Have the Imperial Guard.
Oh, the Imperial Guard totally go and do it anyway. But but that's where the Arbites, what I like about the Arbites is the Arbites serve this weird purpose. They actually report to a High Lord of Terra, which is, and so they don't report to a governor. So what happens is an Imperial governor runs, you know, what his planet. His police force doesn't report to him. By the way, I keep using the word him here because this game is pretty male-centric. I'll use it for when it changes, but they don't report to them. So they're this independent police force. They're also, like the Coast Guard, though, they fly around on ships randomly, like searching vessels.
Shit ton of them.
Yeah.
And they are like, they have the best shit.
Yeah.
They're regular dudes, though.
Oh, yeah. And they are full-blown Judge Dredd. And if we're going to get into a second, like what they're allowed to do. But they're actually, they're the ones who arrest corrupt governors.
Yeah,
unless they're the corrupted people, by chaos, in which case
then everybody's fine. And then Inquisition shows up. Yeah. Well, yes, the Adeptus Arbites are in charge of not being the planetary governor's personal force.
Yeah,
the planetary governor specifically can't use them. Not to be that.
And this actually helps in some ways. This really helps the Terra control the galaxy because your biggest fear when you set up the way the Imperium is that a local governor who, like the Brad said, let's say he's not holding a planet, he's holding multiple systems. This is a person who has wealth that's almost unheard of. If they had control of the Arbites or even control of some of the local guardsmen, you have to wage war to get them out. The cool power that the Arbites have, though, is they do have autonomy. Because they report to the Lord of Terra, not to the governor, they have autonomy to arrest, to detain, to search. They carry, almost like the Rogue Traders have their, whatever that thing was called, an Arbite can just pull your ship over, however you pull a ship over in space, and search it. Probably not a space marine ship. They're going to get told to go F themselves in that one pretty quick. But for a like regular guy moving through, this is what the Arbite's power is. Which does bring me to a comment in my notes, where I do want to bitch about this again, because I like to do this from time to time. Currently, my current count is people who have full autonomy within the Imperium are Arbites, Inquisition, Rogue Traders, Space Marines, and Ecclesiarchy. And that's just so far. Like, who doesn't have full authority? Like, it just seems like you'd have this room, like that Spider-Man meme where they're all pointing at each other. And it's like...
and you're not... Here's the thing. You're not wrong. And the better part about this is... You act like full autonomy means you don't really answer to like some people, this particular group. Yeah. No, it means that like if you're just going to work, John and I are gutting our lunch boxes, going down to the Cybermenium mine. I made up a word for that one.
Sure.
And any of those groups says you were caught next to this other Phil that's part of this cult or part of whatever it is that they're doing wrong, they just shoot us.
Well, I mean, that's
honestly, that's also one of the best things that can
that's
happen.
That's the better. I was gonna say, the shooting is the better one. They just all of a sudden, what I like is that you could be walking to work and an inquisitor pulls you over and says, you have to go do this thing for me. I want you at work to go break into the hard drive and give me this information. And you go, okay, inquisitor, I'll go do that. And then you keep walking to work and then an Arbite stops you and says, when you get to work, if you break into the hard drive to steal information, I will shoot you in your head. And you really can't pick one of those two. And you could even, and if you told the two, hey, so-and-so told me to do this, they'd also both still shoot you. So effectively, it sucks being a citizen in the Imperium.
Yeah.
Now.
I do like the note, if you see a person of authority, hide.
Just hide. That's all you do. Just hide. If you're in the Imperium and you see a person of authority, don't make eye contact. Last little bit on the Arbites, though, about kind of where they function is we do see them work with Inquisitors a lot. That's probably
they pick them up quite a bit.
I think that's probably their biggest use because, as we said before, Inquisitors have to work on these planets.
They need supplies and muscle.
They need supplies and muscle, but on a small scale. They've got Imperial Guard for larger conflicts. Obviously, occasionally they can bring in Death Watch or Space Marines or Sisters, whichever.
But the Arbites are also like pretty heavily specialized. They are shock trooper guys.
Yeah. But if you think the Arbites are interesting, check the models out. The models look cool as hell. And read the Judge Dredd comic books because that's really what they are.
They're go to Mega City 1.
So from here, though, we've kind of covered how Imperial space works. Let's dive into the planets because that actually is the topic of the podcast. So point, 30 minutes in, we're getting on topic. Go team.
For a change, this isn't me. He's in charge.
Yeah, you are. We're doing it. So imperial classification, there's a lot of different terms. For the sake of our cast, we're broken down into kind of three basic things. People with planets with people on them, planets with no people on them, planets that used to have people on them. That's kind of it. It's pretty simple, pretty basic. Some of these are pretty, are short. Some of these are more complicated. As we said, the rogue traders are going to these planets and they go and they survey the planet. They give the information back to the Imperium, and the Imperium does one of three things with it. One, they classify it. Two, they remove it from existence. Or three, they tell the rogue trader that that planet was never there. So it's pre-removed from existence.
So we've got, let's just jump in. We're going to cannonball. Planets without people. And this doesn't mean they don't have people. It means they have people that suck, maybe.
Exactly.
But like basically super epically cataclysmic worlds, something we blew it up already. Mm-hmm. We've got one of my favorites in the game, which is they used to have hazardous.
Oh yeah.
Things that could kill you in 40K by going into the terrain. So you've got dead worlds, frontier worlds, waste worlds, demonic worlds, of course, which are now a good deal.
Yeah.
Tomb worlds, which you don't really know that they're tomb worlds until you find out that they're tomb worlds.
Yeah, you find out it's a tomb world. I mean, a lot of these, remember, these are worlds that, you know, some of these, you land on them and it's just like, oh, basically rogue trader lands and the rogue trader doesn't get a message back out, or the rogue trader runs back out screaming, don't go there, don't go there, don't go there, don't go there. So a dead world, as we covered, that's a world that's toxins, war. I mean, when we say war, we mean like a war that happened a while ago. Effectively, there's nothing left. If you'd stumbled across a world that was, let's say the Eldar had fought the orcs on it and there's nothing left, that's a dead world. It's just there's
any,
no purpose.
Any world place that has been touched by Tyranids.
Yeah.
You know, because they leave it literally devoid of resources.
But on a side, an interesting note on dead worlds, Caliban was a death world.
No, Caliban wasn't a dead world. Caliban was a death.
That's right. It's a death world. My mistake. The next ones are like the frontier worlds, which just is what it sounds like. It's a world on the edge of imperial space. It doesn't mean there's people maybe going to it. There might already be settlers on the way, but right now it's there. And again, don't be in the West.
Yeah. Get better. We'll send more guys.
Yeah. That's what they are. Technically, I guess there are probably people on a lot of them. But you need to establish your value to the Imperium before we're going to put you on a, you know, patrol route. One of my favorite ones actually though is just not actually from a lore standpoint, but I thought it's funny, is a waste world. Oh, you know, you like my comment there. A waste world is a planet that we dump garbage on. That's what it is. The Imperium just says, yeah.
Get fired into the sun.
Yeah, we're gonna put it on a planet. That place has gravity. Let's just fly over top of it and dump it. And I believe my note here was, it's like a nicer Cleveland.
Move on, you hater. I don't even live there.
I know. That's why. Why are you defending Cleveland? I don't think anyone defends Cleveland, even people who live in Cleveland. Demon worlds.
We're going to skip these a bit, though, because there's demons, cultist worlds, and stuff like this. These aren't really as much types of worlds as in, we're going to fight you in a little bit. The galaxy's a busy place right now. There's a reason that there's only war.
Yeah, maybe, honestly, Brad, correct me if I'm wrong here. My interpretation of a demon world was that this is like a planet that is sitting just on the edge of the materium immaterium. So it's kind of in the warp.
Oh,
so it's not very colonizable.
It's a big deal now. Also, after Abaddon split the galaxy in half, the rift is a real thing.
Yeah, and so there's planets who sit in that rift.
Yeah, and it's not even that you can't. Actually, some of the worlds are actually beautiful, but they're so close that they're listed as "don't go here." This is just where you send people that want to join a chaos cult.
Yeah,
because you're going to be corrupted. Because you're like, hey, man, is there corruption? You mean like right there?
Yeah.
I can see it.
Yeah. I'm looking at the new exploded eye.
Yeah.
And I feel like if we settle here, everything from that eye is going to be here with
me. Yeah.
And the last one, though, of course, is tomb worlds, which We're going to do a Necron episode. Don't worry. Man, Tomb Worlds. Tomb Worlds are bad. You, as a human, you don't want to be on a Tomb World.
No.
Yeah. There's a lot of... Yeah, they're grumpy neighbors. Planets that used to have people are equally bad. Chaos and Xenos are real. They continuously conquer places. But also, I will say, it's not just... That's not the only reason you lose planets. Imperium isn't the best at mining a planet. Sometimes you crack the core. These planets used to have people on them. These are planets that sometimes mankind just sacrificed it to a chaos incursion. Sometimes mankind went too far with...
We also are pretty cool with collateral damage, more fighting.
Exactly.
You're like, this planet's a little out of the way. Mm-hmm. If we just let them take this planet, then fight them when we get over to here, it'll be way cooler.
Well, because we do have, I mean, as much as production's amazing, there still are limited resources in the Imperium. And that actually brings us to the first one, which is a forbidden world. A forbidden world was a happy part of the Imperium that the Inquisition goes,
no. And we haven't had the time to do anything about it. And right now in this timeline, the Imperium is really stretched.
Yeah.
We are actually being invaded from, yes.
Exactly. It's nothing but conflict. And so why bother sometimes? Okay. So these are forbidden worlds, or worlds the Inquisition has said, remove this from Imperial record. And there's probably going to be an exterminatus coming. It just hasn't gotten there yet. The next one is just a derelict world. These ones, this is the one that rogue traders spend their most time going to, which is a derelict world is a world that went dark. And
you have to find out why.
Yeah, there's some best cases, mining error, you know.
Well, there's mining error. We're going to get into some of the specific types because the Imperium gets real specific on what your planet's supposed to do. We'll touch on that in just a bit. So sometimes we forget to send you food.
Yeah, and so the planet's all dead. The thing is, the Imperium will just sit there. When they send the rogue traders out, if the rogue trader comes back and the world was important, and the rogue trader's like, yeah, everyone's dead, but there's nothing actively there, the Imperium will just go, all right, load a ship, send a billion people there. We're recolonizing it. So derelict worlds, they end up going back into the fold quite a lot.
A lot, actually.
It's just like, well, it was valuable before. Maybe we'll figure out what happened later. You know, again, LV-426. There's also ones that have people on them that are not part of the Imperium. And this is actually, these are another ones that are kind of interesting when you think about chaos and all the stuff that goes into them. So they're just worlds that were conquered by mankind. Then Dark Age of Technology happened. And we've never reclaimed them.
Because 20,000 years went by.
Yeah, but we don't feel like it.
Because it's also a lot of times out of the way. And these people just... had a lot of these people also have pretty high levels of tech.
Yeah.
Because they're still sitting on STCs and things of mm-hmm. that nature. And then the AdMech finds out, and then you don't have it anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't want to have one thing we probably should mention. If you have an STC in the 40K millennia, don't tell anybody. No. It doesn't end well. So these are worlds that are either self-sufficient, but really too far off the beaten path for it to be worth it to the Imperium. Or they're worlds that are actually, they're self-sufficient, but they just don't have enough mineral resource to be that valuable. You get worlds that are like, you know, like they talk about the feudal worlds, which mankind has actually descended from a technology to a point where they're back with like fighting with swords. And it's just a meh. And the Imperium looks at those planets and goes, it's just not really worth the time. Yeah. Like, I don't care. There's not enough people there.
And it's funny because you think, come on, they wouldn't just leave whole worlds. You're like, yeah, again, if you're being invaded on a galaxy wide, you're going to make some.
I mean, there are, it's all actuarial decisions. They're sitting there saying, okay, if we conquer this world, we bring it back into the fold. I mean, let's skip the ones that might fight back. I'd say it's an easy one for us to conquer. Remember, you have to go bring billions of people to that world. You have to build the factories. You have to do all this stuff. Ugh. What if it's like four warp jumps away from where you want it? It just becomes a, screw it. We'll get to it later.
You know what? I'm putting this on a recording today because typically John and I drink some wine. And sit down. You have cough drops, hot tea, and I'm currently drinking out of a glass out of John's cupboard that says, roses are red, foxes are clever. I like your butt. Let me touch it forever.
Yeah, I like to buy my wife cute things.
I just noticed that with... Where are we going today?
Yeah. I don't have a lot of normal mugs. All right. But with all that, let's dive in. So that kind of gives you the overall arching. So these, what we've just covered there was all the planets that are part of the Imperium that the Imperium is not actively on. So now we want to dive into the ones that are actually settled. So I guess the better way of saying that, let me do that again. What we just went over were all the unsettled planets that make up the Imperium. And there's a lot of them for obvious reasons. But let's dive into the ones that actually are settled. And so again, if you guys can't figure out, I like to categorize stuff. It helps my brain work better when I do these things. So these ones we're going to say production, government, and war. Those are the three purposes these planets are there. Again,
some of the production worlds are kind of war.
Oh, yeah. There's always going to be a cross right here. Exactly.
And the thing is, I want to go with this real quick on this. This is why we said some planets just became black and we had to repopulate them again.
Yeah.
Because the Imperium will literally take everything they need from your planet. And when I say everything, I mean, hey, man, it would be cool if we had all of the water and all of the everything. Like, I want the soil. Yeah. And then they go, you guys now make storm rays. And all of a sudden you're like, what? You're like, we'll ship food to you from one of the production worlds, agricultural worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you don't get your water and food. And you go, does this planet have anything? You're like, oh no, they took that 1,000 years ago.
Yeah. Oops, you're all dead. But the factories are still there. So you just. So bring them like, back through.
So you just bring a new population of people. You're like, sorry about that.
Sorry about that. Our bad in the last one.
Yeah, we messed it up. There was a skipped email.
Yeah. So planets of the Imperium have a few things in common. One, unless you're incredibly wealthy, they suck to live on. Two.
Suck is mad that you compared it
to true.
Living on a world.
We're going to do some pretty deep dives in some of these worlds. But yeah. Basically, everything we discuss, if you are a member of the nobility, things are totally cool.
It rocks.
Yeah. If you're not, you've also got a problem of at any time, you've got invaders, which are not just Xenos. There are pirates in 40K, as you'd expect there to be. Even internally, you've got roving gangs. You've got all these things. The Imperium only cares that goods are arrived. They don't really care how they're made. The Imperium is a giant sausage factory.
Well, the thing, again, I can't stress enough, the basis of the game, the world, the lore, is that everything about the Imperium is to fight the wars that are going on right now that are continuous and never ending.
And they are wars of survival. They are not wars of like this. So let's distract the populace with a war. The Tyranids are trying to eat us. The
Chaos is trying to destroy the galaxy.
Exactly. The Drukhari are gross. Tau.
Whatever. Hey, Orc's got a Wog.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so there's a Wog coming. Yeah. All these things. The Imperium is not wrong to do this. With that, actually, so let's actually start with war worlds that are actually a key part of the war effort. Primarily, that's their main.
And there's some big things about these. Like, you have things like armory, fortress worlds. Armory are
it's a munitions dump. Let's start with armory worlds. So it's just a planet of munitions. It's the Amazon warehouse of the Imperium,
and it's a big deal. It's like literally a planetary warehouse.
Yeah, and so. If you think about it, as we discussed before, the astropaths don't randomly jump places. They kind of follow pre-planned routes. So you're going to dump these armory worlds on there so that you can go to this one place and get every gun, orbital cannon, whatever it is you're going to need to go and just wage war.
And again, when we say these places are defended, it's not like, hey, there's some guardsmen there. Yeah. It is a 40,000 satellites. Probably several moons are around you, all with comically Acme level cannons pointed out.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think this is if you're an Imperial citizen, this is actually a pretty good place to live because you're not going to get a Xenos incursion. No. You're probably not going to even get a Chaos incursion. So the plus side, you have all that stuff. Downside is you are sitting on a planet that is comprised of nuclear weapons.
at best.
Yeah. So if things go wrong, you won't know it went wrong. You will just cease existence. But these worlds are pretty critical. The next one, though, that you go into are a fortress world, which are comical in how they've built them. Mm-hmm. Cadia was a fortress world, I believe.
Because everything's surrounding.
Yeah. And so these ones...
The problem is that when you're in a fortress world, as opposed to an armory world, armory worlds are where we ship stuff, so we keep people away from them.
Yes.
Fortress worlds are we put them. We didn't just put the planet. We choose them to be fortress worlds because they're on the front lines or close enough, which means that this is a shitty world to live on because you are going to die because you are a regular dude.
Yeah. I mean, they put guns on top of guns here. A fortress world can take out an invading fleet by itself. It's got enough guns on it to do that.
The problem is that, well, because it has all that, it means that shit is probably always going down.
Yeah, I think the note I made here was Cadia was a fortress world, and the key word there is was. Fortress worlds are incredibly dangerous to be on because they only exist to have brutal levels of conflict.
By the way, I do love that John has rated each one on a scale of 1 to 10 and chances to die.
Yeah, chance of violent death. To die in 40K is 99. Chances of violent death on a armory world was like 3 out of 10. On a fortress world, it's a 7 out of 10. The new one, though, that just actually got added in the recent part of the game, I might have even been in Leviathan, was the Sentinel world.
Yeah, it's since Bobby G came back.
Yeah, okay, so it would have been the 8th edition then. So yeah, we've had
8th edition.
5 years, yeah. No more than 10 years.
It would be Nephilim. Rob Nephilim?
Might have been. Yeah, it's one of those. But the Sentinel world is this is a very Bobby G solution to a problem, which is I've got Tyranids rampaging, Orcs rampaging, Necrons are rising up. How about I just put some stuff in between the two of them? So a Sentinel world is just a world that exists between an enemy and a world you care about. And it's kind of a fortress world, but it's not a fortress world.
Just because we haven't had a Tau dig,
yeah,
we passed it over. But as usual, in the notes, John said, listing threats, he went, Tau. I mean, they're not really a threat.
Tau are not really a threat. I mean, it's fine. We're not
just worse, just for all you Tau lovers, I want to make sure that you know that John still shit on you.
Shit on your viewers every episode. I don't really, at this point, I'm just doing it because of tradition. But yeah, so they're kind of this, they're almost like a faux fortress world where, yes, we put guns on it, but we don't invest the level we do it in a fortress world. So getting sent here, real bad. This is...
For all you Bobby G lovers, though, G-Man is, like, amazing at predicting. He's the king of this shit.
This is, and it's he's actually like a genius move.
He's literally looked at the maps and looked at things and goes, in 20 years, this is going to have an invasion coming this way. So start building a world here. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
What's it going to do? It's probably going to get plowed, but I need you to just to.
Yes. But while it gets plowed, we're going to come in from the other side. It's a sacrificial. Sentinel world's a better word term. It's a sacrificial world. We're just going to sacrifice this world to an invading force. And then primarily Tyranids, while they're eating the world, we're going to counterattack and just wreck shop.
But we need you guys to stay alive long enough for us to get there.
So as I said, armory world, chances of violent death, 3 out of 10. Fortress world, maybe 7 or 8 out of 10. This one's an 11 out of 10. If you're in a Sentinel world, you die.
Especially if you're in a Sentinel world with Chaos, because after all the warring ends, and then the Inquisition shows up and goes, you saw Chaos.
Chaos. Yeah, exactly. It's all bad. So those are the worlds that are kind of part of the war effort in that level.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
The next one, though, is the government worlds. And these are the ones who were designed to kind of keep the Imperium running smoothly, so to speak. It's just...
These are weird, though.
Yeah.
Because they vary wildly in what life is. We'll talk about it in the next episode. But these are crazy. Because you have In the government world, you have things like the cardinals, the ecclesiarchies, and they are massive palace slash fortresses slash chapels that are there to overwhelm you with how awesome the emperor is.
Yeah.
And
it just, it's a planet sized church that the cardinal sits on. Cause remember we talked earlier this episode about imperial governor. There are technically two imperial regional governors. You've got the imperial governor and then you have the ecclesiastic cardinal.
Right.
And they both will oversee the same things. But I would actually argue that the cardinal has more power because the imperial governor, the Arbites don't work for, but the Sisters of Battle do work for the cardinal.
Right.
So if there's a disagreement,
you're going to lose.
Yeah. Just throwing that one out there.
Sisters have superpowers and access to demons.
Yeah. Just that's going to be a fun episode.
So it's a big deal with this because the cardinal worlds are supposed to communicate basically where the ecclesiarchy is moving. It's massive forces for one, but also people flock to these. These are like giant mecca places to go to see the might of the emperor. And it's one of the things where if you get involved, even at a low level ecclesiarchy, there's chances that you can just make it. And this will be the, weirdly enough, the highlight of your life, even though the trip will still probably suck.
Yeah.
Because you get to see something awesome that isn't you putting widget A into widget B. Yeah. Yep. But they do a lot of training here and a lot of wacky training because they send a lot of people here to do specific things. They also do crazily terrible stuff here too because they...
This is where they build a pendant.
They make dependent engines.
Dependent engines are built here, which is going to be I'm going to be honest with you guys, the Sisters cast is going to be creepy.
Yeah. Like they do some... The cathedrals are pretty good to look at, but you should probably not take the tour into the basement.
Yeah, the lower levels get a little rough.
But they also keep planetary governance alive with this because they want people to be into the religion. So they will have governors from different systems and stuff come into these cardinal worlds.
Oh, yeah. Because they don't, the cardinals and the imperial governors don't want to be in conflict with each other. They want to work together. And so these worlds do have, we get the pleasure worlds in a little bit. They also have a little bit of that going for them too, where it's like they can wine and dine local dignitaries. Well,
but they also want to impress them with how powerful the ecclesiarchy is. So they will have sisters training going on and stuff like that. And like the massiveness of the whole thing is a song and dance a little bit on the top because you want to show them this is how awesome the emperor is and all that.
Off the cardinal worlds is another similar one called a shrine world. And the shrine world is just, it's a world where a miracle, quote unquote, has happened. These are, again, they're part of the ecclesiarchy, and these are designed to kind of keep the citizenry happy. That's what they exist for. It's a place that you would go to as a citizen. If you're not going to go to a cardinal world for your trip to Mecca, you go to a shrine world, and you can see a great shrine to a saint who died fighting.
And it's usually somewhere that died there. That's the
they would have died there. So remember, I think the note I made here is the Imperium's not building amusement parks. So this is kind of the best thing you got is you can go somewhere and say, oh, I read this story about so-and-so who single-handedly held back a tide of orcs because of their belief in the emperor. And we're going to go and see, the battlefield that they did this on. For those of you, Americans who live in the East Coast or anyone who lives in Europe, something you can do. You can go see battlefields that are still there. If you live in the West, maybe there might be one. You want to do Night Worlds, Brad?
Night Worlds, well, they're Imperial Knights, as in Walking Titans.
Yep.
And the smaller, everything from smaller knights to the big boys. And they are, weirdly enough, all feudal houses.
Yeah.
And they fight a certain way and they make certain types of knights a little bit better than the others. And it's crazy because these worlds are devoted to this.
Yeah. Well, it's because an imperial knight, it's something you really can't just be taught to do. You have to be raised from birth to be able to pilot these things. They interact with your actual brain. They lock you. That's how a knight pilot works. So the only way to actually get these things able to work is you have households where even they're genetically similar enough that
to have specific. It's why the specific night, the night, they don't have as much right now, but in past rules, you had different rules for each feudal house and what specifics they were good at.
Exactly.
They moved a little faster. They were a little more defensive. Mm-hmm. They were more offensive. They all had a different style of combat.
Exactly. And that's where, so these they have entire worlds devoted to them. And yeah, as I said, they're feudal. You have the upper echelon of the world are the knight pilots. And then everyone else kind of fills in the gaps below them. But these worlds are extremely important for the Imperium, as you could imagine, because you can't have Imperial knights without pilots. And you can't have pilots if you don't have knight worlds. So they're kind of this weird little dichotomy.
And these are large enough, and we'll go fully into the, you know, the Adeptus Titanicus on this, but like the Titans themselves are cities. You know what I mean? And even the knights, when you're even down to the smallest knights, they still require a support staff to make this thing run. And so people are trained and they're basically in a caste system about that. There's pilots, there's gunners, there's guys that are just specifically for repairing, cleaning, getting the knight from point A to point B. It's a whole thing of squires on up to just the servants that do things. And it's taken really serious. And it is, again, because your loyalty and your appreciation of the emperor, you stay in your role.
And these worlds, one note is that they're usually near a forge world. So what happens is the way it structures is the night world the people are brought up. You've got pilots from birth. They're being trained how to do this. And they're usually near an Admech forge world that then builds the knights for them. So they work in tandem in this one. And we'll get to forge worlds in a minute here. The interesting thing about this is that it creates politically a weird situation because the forge world is run by the Admech. As we said before, the Admech are not necessarily part of the Imperium.
I mean, they are.
Yeah, they are. So if I live on a knight world, I am beholden to the Admech because without them, I don't get my knight. But I'm also beholden to the Imperium because without their sign-off, I cease to exist. So it's
Also, they have to ship me my stuff.
Yeah, and so it's just this weird thing. So they actually end up, they're kind of like Space Marines. It's not like Space Marine recruiting worlds where they're this independent body within the Imperium that no one really wants to mess with because it's so important for the war effort.
And they all, again, because it's worlds, they have their own traditions and things of this nature. And we're pretty still backwoods, dark. Again, we don't make new, besides the Admech, we're kind of operating pretty blurry on the lines. Everybody else is not allowed to adjust anything because it's heresy.
Exactly.
Hey, I wanted to fix how this works. We should shoot this heretic out.
Yeah, back. No. You don't touch it.
This will work so much better if I did kill him.
Yeah. Now you're telling me actually one of my favorites, and it's favorite from a dark standpoint, pleasure worlds. So the last kind of like we'll call it, I classified these under government because pleasure worlds are made for one class only, and it's the ruling class. They're the only ones who ever go there. If you're not ruling class and you're on a pleasure world, I'm going to get to that in a second. You're probably not getting as much of the pleasure out of it. So the Imperium has an issue where I've got these feudal governors and they, we're going to dive into hive worlds later, but a lot of these Imperial governors are overseeing planets that are shit. They are toxic wastelands.
Yes. They're in charge of it. So it doesn't suck as much for them,
but they still have to be on it.
Right.
And it's a shit show.
So and they send them to Naboo.
Yeah.
And take them on a everything weird stuff happens.
Yeah. So that's what they build these pleasure worlds so that an Imperial governor or a cardinal, whoever it is, can get a nice little break from being a little bit too close to the common folk. So they build these things out. And the pleasure worlds, that's what they're designed to just keep people happy. We don't, because what you don't want, at the end of the day, remember, if an imperial governor decides to turn on the Imperium or start taking money for himself, as we've discussed, the Arbites can kill him, the Inquisition can show up, the space goes, but it's still going to create a disruption.
They would rather just have them happy and less corrupt.
Exactly.
We know that you're going to be a little corrupt. We need you to be. Yeah. Don't mess with how the make the spice flow.
The level that this game's a ripoff of Dune is impressive. Anyway, but that's where these things are. The pleasure worlds exist to keep them saying, well, I can't make it that much better for myself by screwing over the Imperium, and I will die if I do it. So
I love that you put the things that they want you to keep running. You have to have a level of don't worry about it conscious when you're like, hey, man, I heard that that guy and everyone he knows does a little bit of psychics. You're like, cool. We need to put them in a shovel and dump them into the oven of the Emperor.
That being said, pleasure worlds do have a little bit of a downside. Brad, is there a chaos god that would that you think might be into pleasure cults?
Yeah, these are basically just Slaanesh breeding grounds. Yes,
this is, if we think about, like we talked before about like demon worlds or worlds that used to have people on it. I don't have any numbers on this, but I expect that there's a certain percentage of pleasure worlds that just go dark every so often.
I mean, because this is just where you just go. The Inquisition could just have a guy in a gun on a in a lawn chair just shooting people. It would just be easier.
Yeah. Also, no. This is where I mentioned earlier. If you are not a member of the nobility and you're on a pleasure world, that means your job is probably to be this. And some of these people are monsters. So just like we discussed in the fall of the Eldar, these pleasure worlds descend into that pretty
like instantly.
Yeah.
It's you again had a guy that's super okay with sending thousands of people to their deaths every day.
Yeah.
And literally
my thought process, the timeline is, you know, I look at like an amusement park. The Imperium builds a new pleasure world. Everyone gets there and it's like white sand beaches. It's perfect drinks by the pool. Everything's this. And like, isn't this great? And everyone's in all the visitors. This is great. 4 days later, there's just screams of murder because they're just killing the staff for fun. And they're like, why did you do that again? And
that's the most important thing there was again.
Every time you people do this, the Inquisition's just like, we're on our way. That's effectively what happens on pleasure worlds. Now, the last group is production worlds, and these are what really make up the Imperium. If we think of the majority of Imperial space, it's going to be production worlds.
I mean, we're at war, 1, 2, carry the 1, 100% of the time.
Yes.
And also, let me count the play everywhere. Yes.
At all times. So
we need supplies, check all.
Yeah.
So we need this. And when did we need it? We need it now.
The
Imperium, we needed it yesterday, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the note I made is the Imperium is built on outproducing their enemies. So for those of you who play 40K competitively and you play the Imperium, you're playing a horde army.
Yeah.
That's what they are. They're a horde army.
And the thing is we're really good.
Oh, incredible. It's
a horrific place to be.
Yeah.
But we are staying in the fight because we just make shit better than everybody else does. Period. Yeah,
and think about the complexity we're talking about here. We have to take stuff from all over the galaxy, bring it all across the galaxy, turn it from something that was in the ground into a lasgun or orbital cannon, you know, ceramite armor, you know, type thing. So this is what the Imperium is built around. And so the first one, though, that we'll dive into is people need to eat. You know? It's a key thing. We haven't solved that one yet. And so they had to, the issue though, is that you can't, as Brad would discuss, we specialize. The Imperium is specialized.
And you have to at this point in time.
Yeah.
Because we need all of the things all of the time. We can't, this is why it's a hellhole. It's why life in the 41st millennium is just shit. It's
a nightmare.
But we make worlds that do one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is agro worlds. And when you talk agro worlds are weirdly enough wildly different.
Yes.
Some agro worlds are making food for a differentiate of populace and stuff like that. Other ones look like the back of the train in Snowpiercer, I'm sorry, but that's what they're making. They're making, yeah. You wish you were getting the slop from the Matrix ship.
Yeah.
So they're just pumping out trillions of tons of stuff that will keep you alive. Other worlds are making food. And then there's others, maybe they're just making chicken, rice, and broccoli from Brad's old life.
For those who don't know, Brad was quite the bodybuilder at one point in his life and spent a lot of the years having chicken, broccoli,
and rice.
A lot of that. It's just, so these actually, I think, might be one of the best places to live if you're not noble, if you're not nobility, because there
if
is...
If you're a worker drone, this I think it depends on which aggro world.
Right.
Because some of the aggro worlds that are just basically making continuous slop still kind of suck almost like a hive world.
But still
take the ones that are making real stuff. You'd always take it around.
Yes.
You're like, hey, man, what's your world? A bee stings you in the face every 15 minutes. I'd be like,
all right. So B+?
Yeah. But you are... And the ones that are not making slop, fresh air, sun, not already populated because they don't need that many people. They need space.
Yep. To grow stuff.
So to grow things.
These are not bad places to live.
Imperium wise.
Yeah. Next one from there is a world that we should mention because it's used to cause a lot of contention in the game. Forge Worlds. nothing to do with actually, the lore is nothing to do with the issue with the game, but for those of us who played long enough. When someone would pull out a Forge World model, it was
Worlds are terrible, but they also are what keeps the Imperium in the fight.
Yes.
Because they make all the things that we need to fight.
Yeah.
Tanks, ships, knights, more guns.
All the big stuff comes out of a Forge World. And the Forge Worlds, what's interesting about Forge Worlds is they're actually technically run by the AdMech. So a Forge World is not... It is under the control of the AdMech because that's who makes all the big stuff. So all your tanks, all of that stuff.
But you're also not allowed to know how they're making it. So even though you're in a giant forge and you're making the left finger of a knight, you're not allowed to know how anything else goes. Make your damn finger and go away.
Don't look around.
And your family has made the finger for the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the other thing is AdMech are also not the biggest. I would say their OSHA violations would be pretty high. so if you're working on a Forge World, and you're living on a Forge World, you are surrounded by giant machinery that just falls randomly. Sparks, fire, flame.
Also, you are required. So if you're working at your station and one of the AdMech guys decides that you don't do your job as effectively as you can, you just get a new set of arms or your eyeball plugs into the thing now so that you can go faster. Did you want any of these things? Nah,
but you have them now.
Yeah. You don't have two legs. You have two more designed three stalks that you stand on.
Or treads. However, whatever it is, whatever makes you do your job better, we're going to go ahead and implant that in there. From after that, there is one world left. And that last world is called a hive world. And we are actually going to stop here because we're going to do an entire episode on hive worlds. And the reason why is you'll see when we get to hive worlds. They are a complete nightmare, but incredibly important to the Imperium.
Sell now. Property values are going low.
Oh, God. So with that, let's just kind of recap some of this episode.
Imperium's a giant space. It's mostly empty. The places that we're in. We're going to show we have so much population. And again, we have to really stress the reason that we're this way right now is the Imperium is built for war.
Yeah.
The Imperium, it doesn't even work. If we actually won the war, the Imperium would fall apart. Exactly. Immediately.
You know, I think that's actually a good point. It's like the Imperium is not, we talked about this with the Inquisition. The Imperium's not evil. It's just, it's necessity. The Imperium doesn't treat all of its citizens like garbage because it's just trying to make an extra buck here and be a little bit wealthier. It's doing it because at all times, trillions are dying every single day in conflict. So they are just.
Yeah, we're
feed the machine.
We're a galaxy-wide war economy.
Yeah. And So all these planets as we've been through, they all suck. I mean, Pleasure Worlds are.
Pleasure Worlds are still going to be Slanesh.
Yeah, it depends who you are.
Also, do you work there or did you go there?
True. Yeah, it's a good point. We're going to dive into Hive Worlds. We're going to spend a bit of time on kind of what life is like for nobility. So we're going to get a bit more into kind of, because what we wanted to do was give you guys a wide recap and kind of do all the quick hits. So when you're reading your codex and they talk about, oh, so-and-so recruits from an agri world or such-and-such invaded this world, we wanted to give you that. But when we talk about 40K lore in depth, our next cast is going to go pretty heavy into one of the most important parts of the game, including there's an even sub-game called Necromunda that exists.
So good, by the way.
It's a great game. Also, the Hive Worlds are settings.
Kill Team's kind of based on...
I would say a Kill Team kind of falls into it a little bit. But even a lot of the novels, they're always going to touch Hive Worlds because they are just so important. But with that, again, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Mostly like. come join our Discord. There's a lot of communication in there. You'll see Brad and I are actually both in there pretty actively as well. It's a fun time for us. And yeah, if you're at an event that we're going to be at, come say hi. We stand out. But without that, I'm John Barsotti. This is Brad Chester.
This guy.
All right, have a great night.